song is so beautiful, and the fact that Guru Rinpoche, Guru Padmasambhava used to come there for meditation, and all, we have all these nay sites right now, yep. And the birthplace of 6th Dalai Lama, His Holiness. Oh. This was the first issue, yeah? I should point it here, I think. Yeah. Issue one, okay. These books can translate to people actually gathering support for the Tibetan cause. It was just like, yeah, a lot of people did not really know, like, a lot about Northeasterns or Tibetans, right? Until last year, I don't even think I had many Tibetan friends. Until last year, until my first trip to Dharamshala, you know? So, but then when I'd be walking, Tibetans would just be like, bro, get on. I know you're going there, right? Yeah, they'd ask me, and then like, get on, yeah, I'll drop you there. I would just get rides up and down. So I was like, whoa, what is this, you know? It's very nice. I felt very good. Yeah. The principal was a very interesting person. And the way he talked to me, I felt like there's actually hope for me. Modern Tibetans right now, gotta do what you gotta do, but gotta be in touch with your roots, yeah? In other things, I think AI is great, especially, I mean, I love ChatGPT. Yep. It's my best friend right now. Anything, any doubt I have. The artist community is definitely not happy about AI. Definitely not happy about AI being used in this way.
Interesting.
I went to Tibet Museum, yeah?
Okay.
And then, that's when I learned everything about Tibet. Mm. I literally knew nothing about Tibet.
Unsilenced Voices of Young Tibetans is a podcast presented by the Foundation for Nonviolent Alternatives, where young Tibetans share their personal stories, experiences, opinions, and journey in exile.
Tashi Dilek, namaste, and welcome to FNVA's podcast, Unsilenced Voices of Young Tibetans. Today, we have with us a Tibetan making great strides in the field of illustration and storytelling. He weaves the oral folklore of a Tibetan tradition through art and has illustrated several children's books for the Central Tibetan Administration, popularly known as the Tibetan Government in Exile, and also Manjushri Education, to name a few. He has worn several different hats to reach where he is now and is currently in work of a comic book series titled Khando Dawa Sangmo, A Tale from the Land of Mintawang. Welcome to our show, Losa Sevala.
Thank you so much. Alhamdulillah. It's been such a pleasure. I've been thinking of doing interviews, but then I feel like it's I'm trying to go get out of the box by being here. Let's see how it goes. Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much.
The pleasure is all ours, Losa Sevala, for having you here on this show. You know, you have a wonderful story, and I believe all our audience would like to know more about you. So the first question is, you were born in the beautiful land of Tawang. You know, I've been there myself a few years back. So how was it growing up there, and how did your family came to Tawang in the first place?
Since kindergarten, nursery, I've been sent to boarding schools. Mm-hmm. You know, my parents sent me to boarding schools all over. I mean, it started from Arunachal, not in Tawang, outside Tawang. And then I went on to Nagaland, West Bengal, Bangalore, yeah? So all these places. And then I did not really stay for a very long time in Tawang. But then when COVID happened, I ended up going back to Tawang, staying there for quite a bit. And then that's when I kind of realized how beautiful the place is. You know, it's like that song, you only love her when you let it go, let her go. Kind of like that. That's when I realized what a gem it was. Every place we went to for little car rides or just hanging out with friends, all the sights that tourists would come and see from very far, I would go there just for fun and realize, yeah, actually, Tawang is so beautiful. And the fact that Guru Rinpoche, Guru Padmasambhava, used to come there for meditation, and all, we have all these nay sites right now, and the birthplace of 6th Dalai Lama, His Holiness. They have, I feel like Tawang is astounding, you know. I feel very, very blessed to be born in a place like Tawang, like out of all the places that I could have been born in. Indeed. Yeah. And my parents, my family, I think we have our origins from Kham and Amdo, but then for the longest time, I mean, I think I'm the third generation, yeah. We've just been, due to my grandparents' business, they've been doing business all over, like, in the border region,
indeed,
right?
Indeed.
So they've been doing business all over India, and then we've just been settled in this, in the region of Tawang for the longest time, yeah.
So it's interesting how you raised, you know, like, COVID was the major reason that sort of brought you back to Tawang for that matter, and sort of made you realize your roots for that matter as well. Because I felt the same thing, you know, like me going back to Uti. So were there any memories that you could share with us during this very, I mean, tough time for a matter, but also many memories were created, in my opinion.
I think I was very sheltered because I was in Tawang. My friends were back in the cities, right, like in Delhi, Bangalore, or Kolkata. And then from what I heard from them, it was very stressful, right? And of course, we watched news every day. But then being back at home, the little small town of Tawang, we were so safe. Of course, we had our restrictions, but then I was just like able to go out for like little bike rides.
Yep.
I'd be able to go around. I'd be able to go for runs. Mm-hmm. We never had difficulty getting food or anything. And then I think I was very lucky because I don't think a lot of my friends were able to experience that. And then plus, I think it was difficult because crazy rent and everything they had to keep paying and being cooped up in that room. Yep. I think it really, really messed them up as well, some of them. I'm so glad. I'm so glad I was back home.
And you were lucky to be in Tawang during that time.
Yeah,
that
it was really good.
So you said something interesting, Lobsa Sabala. Though, even though you were born in Tawang, your childhood or even your teenage years for that matter, you were traveling throughout India, but mostly around the Northeast region for that matter, like Nagaland, West Bengal, and even Bangalore eventually. But what was your experience there and how did you feel while growing up, you know?
Okay. You know, like, I have this Tibetan identity, but I also am a Northeastern person,
right? Indeed.
I'm an Indian national.
Yep.
So I think it was very similar to how Tibetans kind of feel, Tibetans in exile right now in India, when they go around traveling anywhere within India.
Yep.
People might think, oh, are you from Northeast?
Mm-hmm.
Or like, yeah, so we're always like, yeah, I'm Tibetan, I'm Northeastern, you know? So that was what happened. But then it was just like, yeah, a lot of people did not really know like a lot about Northeasterns or Tibetans, right? That was what I felt. But then other than that, it was a very good experience, I think. I was able to get very good education. My parents mainly focused on me learning English and Hindi, right? Because they wanted me to have, like, before anything else, they just wanted me to have, like, equal opportunities with, like, compared to anyone else, right? That was, I think, like, their main focus. So they never pushed me to, like, learn Tibetan because they kind of were like, it's in your blood. You'll be able to learn it. Like, if you ever want to speak it, you'll get it really fast. And I feel like, yeah, I'm a little familiar with the language, but then I think I'm getting it very fast. But then that is what happened. They just, it was just like Indian schools all around. And I, until last year, I don't even think I had many Tibetan friends until last year, until my first trip to Dharamshala, you know? So that's why the whole Tibetan culture and Tibetan way of life was just something very, very new to me. I was like a total Indian, in my behavior, in I think everything,
I can see a lot of parallels between you and me, you know, not only the first question, but even the second one, when you put it, how, you know, people identify the issue of identity and how people call you. See, I'm someone born and brought up in Ooty, Tamil Nadu. So when I say I'm from Ooty, Tamil Nadu, people are like, what? Come on, you must be someone from Northeast.
Yeah.
So I definitely feel what you went through. And I believe that's what many of us who are sort of in outside the mainstream, for that matter, realize and feel that in India. But let's see. Hopefully, India is also changing and we have Viksit Bharat for that matter. And let's hope for a better future.
I think it's a lot better now. Like, Northeasterns are everywhere right now. Like, all over, like, entertainment.
I think in Big Boss, shows, Big Boss,
there's a... Yeah, contestant, Chumdarang. She's doing so good.
Yeah.
Shout out, you know. Yeah, so I feel like before, we're not getting that exposure.
Yep.
But now that I think the past 10 years, we've come a long way.
Indeed.
And we're really out there right now, and everyone can see us. Like, there's every once in a while, you'll see something new happening with Northeast and someone making it into the mainstream, you know?
Yep.
That's what's happening.
And for that matter, like, it's something that happened recently. We had the very own MP from Arunachal Pradesh, Tapir Gao,
Mr. Tapir Gao,
mentioned about His Holiness, like, whole institution of His Holiness, what the succession means for that matter. And I believe this is something very important for entire Tibetan. And I
feel like your channel was the first one to reveal that news to the public.
I think
when I opened Instagram, it was first you, and then I see a lot of other channels also followed.
Because we were constantly following what was happening in the parliament, you know. So, I mean, off late, there were a lot of adjournments because some, you know, Indian parliament, what happens, you know, a lot of fiery debates for that matter. But off late, these very... questions, these very resolution, these very statements were raised up, and you know, fortunately, when I was watching, I saw this very thing happening, and you know, I just posted it on our social media, and a lot of Tibetans were really pleased with this, and I, as behalf of the entire Tibetan, would like to thank MP Tapir Gao, and it's not only MP Tapir Gao, we have a lot of different MPs throughout India who constantly support us Tibetans, so. Professor Sipala, like going into the question and going into the theme of our discussion now, like I think this is something that everybody would like to ask is, what made you pursue art, illustration, and storytelling?
Let's see. I mentioned I was in Nagaland, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I was in, it's called Sainik School Punglua, Nagaland, okay. SSPN, shout out again. Yeah, so I was in that school. And then since class 6 to 10, and then I had this really, really good friend of mine. He was never diagnosed, but I feel like he was on the spectrum of autism.
Okay.
He actually passed away, I think, 2 or 3 years ago. Yeah. Okay. We were best friends. And then he was, like, you know, some people on the spectrum are very intelligent, they're very smart, they're very good with art. He was very good with art.
Okay.
He had this way of drawing where, like stuff that I learned when I went to art school, he used to draw it like that back then without any formal education in the field.
Okay.
And then I would just find it very interesting. And then also, like, he kind of made me get into art, you know, because he would sit beside me, he would just be drawing, and I'd be like, hey, can you teach me this or anything, something like that. And then I always felt like there's no way I'm going to be able to reach his level. But then somehow that's what got me into art. I would doodle, and then after class 10, I left that. I had to leave the army school because my eyesight was not good enough in the medical examinations. And I went on to a school in West Bengal, and there I continued drawing as well. I became really close with the art teacher there.
Okay.
And that's how I kept in touch with art, but it was just like not that much. I wasn't very great, very basic level of art. And then I go on to Bangalore for college, but then I had no confidence in myself. I was like, I will not be able to take art.
Yep.
It's very expensive, and like these days there's crazy artists. How will you ever be able to afford a life, you know, with your art? That's what I thought. But then I randomly joined this college in Bangalore because my friends were joining that college, and I had nothing else. I don't want to do anything else anywhere.
Yeah.
So I joined because they were taking psychology and journalism. I ended up taking psychology and journalism. 3 months in, we had some mock exams coming up, and I was like, I don't even want to study for the mock exams.
Okay.
And during a festival, there was a festival going on, a psychology festival in the college. I was up on stage, and then I was just this and that. And they asked me a question saying, what would you be doing if not psychology in Christo Jayanti College right now? And I was like, probably an animator. If not here, I'd probably be doing some animation. And then the event ended. And there was this guy who ran up to me. He was like, hey man, I heard you say that. And I part-time at this institute. It's an animation institute. And if you want to just check it out for fun, because it's a very fun studio and a very fun school, right? If you want to check it out, you should come by, you know, with me. And I was like, yeah, sure, why not? I'll just go and check it out, right? I went there. I saw the whole, it was a very small school. Had around, I don't know, 30 students, I guess.
Like, what is it named?
It's called Dr. Beltran School of Animation.
Okay.
So it was a studio where they would teach you art, but also they would be getting projects every other, like they were getting projects, right? So you could work with them. So it was that kind of a setup, not like a traditional school where they would teach you how to, like, you know, draw or whatever. That's what happened. And then the principal was a very interesting person.
Okay.
And the way he talked to me, I felt like there's actually hope for me.
Mm-hmm.
I saw some of the students and their works, and I realized in a span of 1 year, they had really, really improved. And I could see myself doing that when I went to that school. And then that's what happened. Like, right after I went to that studio, I think an hour or two later, I came out of there.
Mm-hmm.
I went back to my home. The very next day, I took a transfer certificate from my college.
Okay.
Went back to Tawang, talked to my parents. My mom was supportive. My dad was like, yeah, do what you want.
Yeah.
But then they were just like, we'll give you the chance to do this. But then they don't really see anything happening out of this. Okay, that's what happened. And then after a month, I came back and I directly joined that art studio.
Okay.
And then to this day, I feel like the whole process was really nerve-wracking because I was like, I don't know what am I doing.
Yeah.
I just like this one place and I want to go there. And then I felt like this adrenaline rush, right? I was very scared. But then that same feeling whenever I get right now, because that was the best decision of my life, I think. And every now and then, whenever I get the same feeling when I'm scared to do something, I feel like this is a good feeling and I kind of do it. So for me, it was very like, I don't know if this is an inspiring story, but I just did art because I was like, I don't know what else to do. You know, it makes sense, right? What I said?
Yeah, indeed.
Okay, yeah. That's how it was. That was the question, right? How did I get into art?
Yep.
Yeah.
So, Lobsang Sabala, like, you shared about what really prompted you to take this field, to get into art for that matter, how your friends, your family, your principal, your colleagues, everyone, you know, impacted you. I mean, basically, your entire environment And for someone to take up such a decision, I think it's very hard, but you really laid it out very clear to us how, I mean, it was very hard, but you see this as one of your best decisions in your life. And I think many people will also take much note of all this and even get inspired. So, Lofsan Sabala, what goes through your mind, you know, like when creating illustration? Because you do Tibetan children books and other formal artworks. So what goes through your mind when you're doing this?
For me, I wouldn't really say I'm a very creative person. Whatever I've studied in art, I've studied through practice and using a lot of books and whatever my teachers, my peers have taught me. And for me, the way I approach art is, I think, through formulas. I mean, yeah, most of my work actually really does involve formulas. If you want to make a character look scary, you use this, you use this color. Some of these lines associate with this. Like, that's how I think I draw everything. Yeah.
Okay. This is interesting how you use formula in artwork for that matter. Like,
it's kind of like maths.
Okay.
A little bit. Yeah, I'm very bad in actual maths.
Okay.
But for me, art is like when it clicks, you know? Like, for example, a logo. Like, logo is like literally like a math sum for me. You give me a name, and I'm like, how do I solve it? How do I transfer this name
into art?
Into a logo? Yeah.
Okay.
And it's not about like, I mean, some people do it. They really draw. They try different ways.
Yep.
But for me, it takes me. Sometimes it comes to me in like 3 days. Sometimes a month. But then, when it does click, it clicks, you know. And then I get on paper and I'm like, oh, like this is the perfect logo right now that could come up with this name. That's what I think. But then. Clients also have different ways of thinking. Some of them are like, no, I don't think it clicks. But in my head, I'm like, it really clicks. Okay.
Yeah. This is very interesting to know, Lofsan. So like in your introduction, I mentioned how one of your major works currently is the comic book series titled Kanto Doa Samo, A Tale from the Land of Mintawang. I myself personally have been to Tawang and I've seen how the local people there very much cherish this very local folklore. So could you share more light about the story itself and your project on this?
You know what's funny? People love this story in Tawang, but my friends in Tawang, they're like, yeah, I can't draw Samo. But none of them know the story. They're like, ah, I think it's an eagle. There's some bird involved. There's some evil witch. None of them. So they cannot really tell the story from beginning to end.
Yeah.
They're kind of just like, ah, there's this thing. There's this story, something like that. And then when I was back home, like, if you ask me, I know a lot of Egyptian mythology, Greek mythology, Hindu mythology. I worked on Action Bible, Mahabharata scenes for comics, right, when I was in Bangalore. So I was like, I'm so well-versed in all of this, but I know nothing. I know none of the folk tales from back home, you know?
Yep.
And then my friends too, who live there, who've been living there for like the past 20 years, they don't know any of the folk tales. They can, because, I mean, they know some of it, I guess, but they can never narrate the whole story to me. Kanro, somewhere when I was trying to get the story from like people, everyone was like, they know this part of it, but they don't know the rest of it.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. And I was like, why is that? I thought that it's crazy because everyone is so interested in all the commercial stuff right now, and no one's actually, it was actually a little sad, you know, like how come like our stories are actually like not being heard by anyone.
Marginalized for that matter, you know.
Yeah, and I was like, that's where I come in, I thought. Like, no one's actually making these stories, I thought. You know, Kanro Samu, there's a lot of, I mean, I don't think it's going to die anytime soon, this story. It's well preserved. But in Tibetan, these thick books, or like, or even if I've seen children reading Kanro Samu books, but it's like one page fully written, and there's like one drawing here.
Okay.
Yeah, not very detailed drawings, too. I think I've seen one book like that.
Okay.
Yeah. And I just thought, like, as a child, I wouldn't really be interested in reading something like this. You know, so many words. I thought a more engaging way would be something like this, you know, like a comic book where it's just few words and a lot of graphic content.
Yep.
So you're, because, you know, like how did Marvel ever come to be? Started with comic books. How did the manga industry, like everything, started with comic books, right? And then now they're making so much, they're making all this money, you know? So I was like, if you could focus here and actually make something out of it, I'm sure they'd be interested in reading it, children. That's how it started.
No, not only children. I mean, I think you have a lot of teenagers, even adult people who consume such materials.
Yeah. Know? If I were to see a comic book from my community, or even if, like, I draw, but I honestly, I don't read a lot of manga.
Okay.
I don't. But I would like to buy it just because I'm like, I think it's such a cool thing to have.
Indeed.
Someone from your hometown, from your community, is working day and night, drawing 30 drawings per day.
Yep.
And it takes a lot of work. So yeah. It's just a lot of hard work, and I think it's very cool to actually have a product like that, mm-hmm. you know, out in the world. I'm very happy that I think it's not the best, mm-hmm. my book, but then I'm very happy with the fact that I was able to come up with a comic book on my own.
Yeah. Well, I think this is something which is very much needed, because even when I was growing up, like, eventually I went to a Tibetan school, spent more than a decade there. Like, we know the story of His Holiness the Dalai Lama, but there was this, I think a Japanese mangaka for that matter, I'm not sure, I don't know the name, but he more or less created a manga, like a comic book of the story of His Holiness. And
I've seen that one.
So it's very interesting, like just a few pictures for us growing up, we get the idea of what actually happened.
You know what, when I, should I say this right now or not?
No, whatever you feel like.
It's like, first time I came to Dharamshala was last year, yeah?
Okay.
The Tibetan community was very nice here. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up showing my work to some people in CTA,
okay.
Sherik Lekung, right? Mm-hmm. The Department of Education.
Education.
And then they were showing me some of the stuff that they've made. Mm-hmm. And I saw this, and I really liked the His Holiness's manga version, right?
Yep.
And I realized the artist was Japanese.
Yeah.
And I was like, why, you know? Why? I think there are enough artists here, you know, in this community as well. And I was like, I felt like if I was here, maybe I would have gotten a chance to do that. But then that book is actually, I think it's very well made.
Indeed. So could you share, like we have some of your comic books here.
Yeah.
Like, could you share?
Right now, this was the first issue. Yeah, I should point it here, I think.
Yeah.
Issue one,
okay.
This came out like, I think, beginning of this year.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think 4 or 5 months
so
into this year.
So who's these two people there? Like,
it's supposed
very
to be
powerful, radiant.
This
like,
is
who's the
Kanuro
one?
Sangmo.
Okay.
It's supposed to be Kanuro Sangmo.
Okay.
And this is Yishikandro Mata Dakini,
oh.
who actually saw Tanamanulgang Tawang right now
okay.
from above and realized there needs to be Dharma
okay.
to be spread here, you know,
okay.
and everyone is barbaric and everyone's mm-hmm. killing each other,
mm-hmm.
so much trouble.
Okay.
And then she realized, she decided to send a version of herself to Tanamanulgang
yep.
to teach people the way of Dharma.
Okay.
Yeah. So I kind of tried to depict that
mm-hmm.
very highly detailed cover page. Yeah. And then came out issue 2.
Oh, is this like the traditional Mopa?
Yeah, the Mopa hat. That's what I did, yeah.
Yeah.
I just drew like a simple, my friends really like this, so
yep,
I kind of decided
yep.
to do it. Cause,
it is.
Yeah. And then the third issue came out like, I
mm-hmm.
think, just 2 months ago.
Okay.
Yeah. And issue 4 right now will probably take, by the end of this year,
okay.
it should be completed.
So, Loksana, if one wants to get a copy of this, like, what's the process? Like, where do you get it? Do you sell it online? Like, what's the thing here?
I am planning to, these parts, right?
Mm.
I'm planning to sell them through my Instagram page.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So if they contact me through Instagram.
So what's your ID? Like, you could share it.
It's @Lopsang, LOPSANGSOEPA.
Okay.
Yeah. And if you could just, like, put it below.
Sure,
yeah?
Definitely.
And then I also plan to compile them and then translate into new Tibetan, and I have some people who are interested in translating it into different languages
indeed,
as well.
Indeed.
Yeah, so I have a lot of plans with this one book.
So I see here Ram Siring. Who?
That's a friend of mine.
Okay.
I mean, I'm totally doing this comic book by myself,
okay.
right? So I can't really afford to pay people for
indeed,
it right
indeed.
Now. But then that's a friend of mine. He's studying in Bangalore.
Okay.
He's a computer science major, and then I basically bought him a little software,
oh,
and then
okay.
he is interested in art,
great.
He kind of does the flat coloring for me,
okay.
and then slowly he also wants to learn a little bit more, but then he doesn't have enough time to
indeed,
like,
indeed.
So we're just like working together,
oh.
yeah. It's just him, he's pretty good at Tibetan, so he kind of helped me with translations and stuff as well. Yeah.
This is amazing, like how two young Tibetans for that matter are coming out and preserving the story of their own local folklore. And.
Mm.
I think it's not only the tale of Khandu Dawasamo, there are a lot of different tales, which I think in the future, after you complete all this, you can definitely cover.
I have a second book lined up,
okay.
like that I'm thinking about, and
great.
So many more. There's so many stories, there's
indeed.
More than enough stories, yeah.
Maybe one story about the great Tibetan yogi Milarepa also would be amazing in my opinion.
there's a comic book, Milarepa, The Great Yogi, by
one.
Evo Vandam.
Yeah.
I think she's a Dutch from Netherlands,
yep.
Dutch artist. Yeah.
Mm.
And I was like, wow, I really like this book.
Yeah.
And it's by a Dutch person. Wow, Milarepa. I was like,
yeah.
why don't we have our own one, you know?
Indeed.
But that one also is very well made, very well detailed and looks very nice.
Indeed, Lopsana. So, Lopsana, something that everybody in this world is talking about these days is AI,
mm-hmm.
artificial intelligence. I mean, funnily enough, we had our Indian Prime Minister, for that matter, when he visited America. I think a few years back, how, I mean, for him, AI is out, even when he said America-India friendship.
Yeah, I think he
did that tactically.
I think I did, yeah.
Yeah, but it is interesting how everybody is talking about it, and many people see it as the future currency, for that matter. So when it comes to artwork and your field of expertise here, what role do you think AI would play, in your opinion?
In terms of art, in terms of... In other things, I think AI is great, especially, I mean, I love ChatGPT.
Yep.
It's my best friend right now. Anything, any doubt I have, any little
not
problem.
Not only yours, any...
Yeah, I'm just like ChatGPT. But in terms of art, I think, do you actually know how it works in terms of art? When you write a prompt, you're like, I want to draw something like this, you write it. And the way it churns out a photo like that, it's actually because it has a database, it has a collection of photographs that it has collected through...
People
a lot putting, of platforms, yeah. Okay. Like maybe you post something on Instagram, you post your art on Instagram, and AI, like these databases, like these giant companies, will just take these photographs without the consent of the artist.
Okay.
It has a giant folder of these. So right now, I can just literally go and be like, give me Kim Jung-gi, the South Korean artist who passed away, give me in his style a drawing. And it'll give you a very lackluster drawing in his version. But then, for me, I feel like those drawings also don't look very good. But there is no consent being taken from him to actually generate these kind of photographs. A lot of, I follow a lot of artists on Instagram, all the good people who are amazing artists. They have all said, they have actually stopped using Instagram even because they don't want their art to be used like this. Because they're not getting anything out of this. And people are just going around. And personally, I also feel like if you were to do your work with AI, if you don't have the budget, if you just do something small, I feel like it's all right. You know, you don't really care about the quality. But if you care about quality, AI will never give you that level of satisfaction as an artist would give you, you know? You can use AI to maybe get a sense of like what do you want or something. But if you want your end result to look good, I think only an artist will be able to give you that result.
So here, Lofana, like I'm very curious because of late I've seen, you know, Tibetans using AI and creating these images of His Holiness being in Tibet. Like, is it the same process? Like they take up certain images and put it together?
Yeah, I think... Here, it kind of works, I think, even if they do that. Because I think it looks beautiful. I've seen those photographs here. And then they're just trying to show a vision, you know. They're not trying to profit off of that. They're not making a photograph like that and being like, my piece, buy it, you know. They're not doing that, right? But then, you can be like His Holiness Dalai Lama in Lhasa, like in front of Potala Palace. Or you can just give very descriptive, like in the sky, looking over the town of Lhasa, the city of Lhasa. You can do like that. If you write it like that, I'll give you a drawing like that.
But truly said, like, you know, a very important point that you said about consent and, you know, intellectual property for that matter. I think there was somebody from OpenAI, I believe an Indian for that matter, who recently raised it up. I saw it in the news somewhere, but very interesting point, Lofana. I think we must definitely remain cognizant of such fact when we use AI, you know.
The artist community is definitely not happy about AI. Definitely not happy about AI being used in this way.
Interesting. This is something I got to know about from you, and I believe many of us listening and tuning into this would know much more as well. So, Lopsangla, like, we are currently at the College of Higher Tibetan Studies, SARA, at Dharamsala here, and you are at SARA studying Tibetan for that matter. So, what brought you here and what are your future plans?
I first, like I said, Indian schools, never knowing any Tibetan way of life, no Tibetan friends. But then I ended up taking a solo trip last year towards Himachal Pradesh. I thought I'd just go for a trip. It was, I was supposed to meet a friend of mine who was going to, I was going to meet a friend of mine, and then we ended up deciding to meet around Himachal somewhere when we're going solo on a solo trip. And then we ended up meeting in Katagla near Kasol. And then, but then she suddenly had to leave because of some reason, and I decided to come back towards Dharamshala and then maybe head on from here. But when I reached Dharamshala, my entire solo trip around Himachal became a trip towards to Dharamshala. Yeah, because that's how much I loved it. I stayed in Baksu, I stayed in Gamru, I stayed in Gangi, I stayed in Dharamshala itself. And then it was very new because I kept hearing about Dharamshala, but I never knew what it was like, you know. But when I got here, it was like people roaming around in chupas, doing kora, you know, and just like all the pepa, zakhang, and then everything just felt like, I feel like I fit in here, you know. And you know, taxis are expensive here, so I would like kind of walk everywhere. But then when I'd be walking, Tibetans would just be like, bro, get on. I know you're going there, right? Yeah, they'd ask me, and then like, get on, yeah, I'll drop you there. I would just get rides up and down. So I was like, wow, what is this, you know? It's very nice. I felt very good. Yeah. And then when I was near Gamro site, Kangi site, I went to Tibet Museum, yeah?
Okay.
And then that's when I learned everything about Tibet. Mm. I literally knew nothing about Tibet. I loved it so much. The first time I went there, I could only spend like an hour because they were closing at 4 or 5 in the evening. Yep. So I was like, I had to leave. Mm. Then I left, I came out of there, and then next day was, I think, Friday, right? I went again, but then I actually booked a hotel right next to, right outside the CTA area.
Okay.
There was a Gyaga hotel. Mm-hmm. I ended up staying in a room there. And Friday I went in, but then again, Friday, the entire day was not enough to cover the whole thing. I went, I think 3 days, I ended up staying in that area, in that hotel, because I kept going there, and then I feel like I was up to date now, like what was happening. It was crazy because the Tibet Museum was like this tiny place that is standing against all of this propaganda, you know, that the Chinese government, CCP, is spreading right now. Yep. And the true story is right here. And I feel like these things need to be preserved, you know? Our stories, our cultural traditions, it needs to be preserved. And if not us, there's so many stuck in Tibet right now. There's only a handful of us out here who have the freedom, who can actually do anything, you know? You do anything, you don't face the consequences.
Indeed.
You know, so I felt like I had a responsibility here. Like, I have all this freedom. I'm working with CTA. Yep. Just like, yeah, that really made me realize that I kind of correlated that feeling with, like, how can I contribute here? Because I don't think I'm a kind of person who can go to the forefront and be like, free Tibet, free Tibet, right? But how can I contribute? So I'm a part of, like, SFT, yeah? And then I do, like, design stuff for them. But then I also realized my other way of contributing would be through books, just, like, these stories that are there, preserving them, writing them down, presenting it to students, presenting it to anyone, even not Tibetans, you know, Indians, any other region of the world, and then presenting it to them in a way where they kind of understand, like, what is our whole thing about, you know, how much importance we place to Dharma, how much importance we place to compassion, you know. That is how actually I kind of thinking about doing these Tibetan folk tales and kind of covering them.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah.
Very interesting, Lopsana, like realizing things. I think when you realize something, you know, you don't need people to say what to do. You just do it.
Yeah.
I think that's what you realize. And, you know, in Dharamsala, Tibet Museum is something where the story of Tibetans are preserved and like how you visit it. I would also recommend other people, whoever visits Dharamsala, this is one thing that you must visit. So, Lopsana, you said something very interesting about how you wanted to make a mark in storytelling, how this is your way of, you know, resisting the Chinese propaganda for that matter. So how do you see your illustration and your storytelling making mark in a Tibetan freedom movement? Because I personally see it you know, happening.
I think, you know, Korea right now is, everybody wants to do everything Korean, skincare, entertainment industry,
dance,
songs, everything.
Okay.
You know, Korea actually became so developed in the past 50 years, and they actually invested so much money in the entertainment industry, thinking about the soft power, you know? So, soft power, that's what I'm thinking.
Oh.
Comic books, you know? In that way, when you actually, for example, where I see a lot of Americans here, or like foreigners from all around the world, right? And they feel very strongly about the Tibetan cause. And they say, I have a friend here, Andrea. She's from Czech Republic.
Okay.
She always wears her Nobelinka bag, right?
Okay.
Which has like these Tibetan motifs there.
Oh.
And she says when she roams around in Czech, they're like, where'd you get this bag from? And then she starts the conversation of Tibet through that, you know? And then I thought like, you know, if you invest in like these kind of books and people read about the books and they're like, wow, I really love this character in this book. And when you have like a fan base, you know, of a character or something, then people are like crazy, you know, they can really fight for something they really, really like. And that's what I thought, you know. These books can translate to people actually gathering support for the Tibetan cause.
Yep.
That way, do you see the correlation?
Indeed,
like,
indeed.
Think about it, Marvel, Disney, man, like, what crazy fan bases do they have? Yeah, and yeah. Where did they start from? It started from an artist in his room designing a superhero character, and he was not even sure if people are going to like it. Mm-hmm. But now it's making billions, yeah? Indeed. And I think what we have, it's very untapped. I feel like a lot of foreigners right now are using Tibetan cultural traditional designs motifs in their designs and making up and profiting off of it like so much. And I feel like we should really step up, you know?
Yeah. And like, not only the foreigners for that matter. I've heard things about how in occupied Tibet, it's the Chinese doing the same thing with our brothers and sisters there, you know, profiting from our own
I believe
culture and way of life for that matter. I mean, they can profit for that, no issues about that. But I think the onus is now upon us.
Yeah, like we should be doing this trial and error, seeing what works, what does not work, and being able to like, that's what I'm like, yeah, should invest in this, I think, you know. Really like, because once it goes well, it's going to go very well for us.
Yeah.
And it's so crazy. You know, like Y2K designs right now are so popular, like all these companies, Chrome Hearts, and I just see so many on Instagram right now. They have like this motif design. Mm. It's like a spear, but it's like very shiny, three-dimensional. It's a Y2K design, basically. I've realized that it actually comes from the Sipakolo.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know if it actually comes from there, but then when I was drawing the
Sipakolo
one time. There is
some inspiration from that. Maybe.
Yeah, it's literally one of the spokes of Sipakolo that can be transformed into a Y2K logo design.
Okay.
You know? Mm. And this design is actually like everywhere right now. Mm. Everyone loves the design. They put it on their brand. Everybody makes a brand. They're like, they put like that little spoke there.
Yeah.
And voila, you have a product and that really sells.
Indeed.
So if you actually like play with like, experiment with these motifs that we have already. Because you see, when you go to Gompa's monasteries, so intricate.
Yep.
There's so much symbology. Yep. Yeah. So I'm like, so much to do.
Indeed.
So much, yeah.
So you really brought to the fore the importance of soft power for that matter. And, you know, like, I'm a big anime fan. Like, it's what Japan did, you know. Like,
anime, yeah. Soft power.
It all started
again.
With Goku's Kamehameha.
And right now, Japan, where are they right now? You know? They really went crazy with it. Yep. And just like, now, so many people, like, people, most of the people in the world, I think, know Japan because of anime right now. Such a crazy fan base they have.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So, Lopsana, like, you're running short on time. I would have loved to ask more.
I would love that.
Maybe I can ask you one question. Let's see, like, have you been in connection, and not only in connection, have you been following artwork of our very sisters and brothers inside occupied Tibet? And have they inspired you for that matter?
Do you know Nehri Studio?
Nehri Studio, definitely.
Yeah.
They've been coming out with not only artwork, but amazing stories also. Yeah
very recently, right? Yeah, that has been very inspiring. But other than that, I feel like from inside Tibet, I've not really seen much. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think I've really seen much. But Chemilamu, shout out. When I was, I think 2 or 3 years ago, I started following her just out of curiosity, right? And I was like, oh, she's so bold and everything. I would post about my story, you know, like about my drawings, and she'd be like, going good, you know, it's looking so good.
Yeah.
She was always very supportive, and I was just like, and I really wanted to meet her, you know, one time. Like literally since day one, she's been there, you know, she's just been like commenting when no one else would be commenting. She'd just be like, this looks really good, like you should like, you know, focus, you should work hard, you know, it's looking good, it's gonna get better and everything. It's always been like that with Chemilamu. And then I never even knew her. And then last year, I think I met her for the first time. Because when I came to Dharamshala, I realized that Tibetan, the International Youth Forum was happening.
Okay.
And I texted her. I'm like, are you in Dharamshala? Can I meet you? Just like, I don't have anything to say to her, but just to meet her, you know, because I did not know when would she be in India again. Yeah. And I went to her. I took like very sloppy postcards of my drawings that I printed out in a shop right next to the Tibetan Youth Forum hotel.
Okay, near Club Di Polo, I believe.
Yeah, Club Di Polo. Right there. There was a very small printing shop.
Okay.
Very low quality. I took out like 2 postcards and a very shitty drawing of like some drawings that I had. And I gave it to her, very low quality. And then I just gave it to her and then we talked for like, I think 10 minutes, took a photograph. And then even that conversation felt really good because she was just like, because I was very like, I don't speak Tibetan, I don't know anything. I'm very new here. I feel very bad. I'm not doing anything for the cause. She just said, it's okay, and like whatever you're doing already, it's good enough, and keep building on that, right? But I think I went off topic.
No, it's very interesting since you brought up people like Chemilamu, not only Chemilamu, like what they sort of inspire the Tibetan youth. And I can see through her very action how you got inspired for that matter.
Definitely, yeah. I was just like so positive, you know, and then I would see her really studying Buddhist philosophy all the time. Even if she's working everywhere, she'd post her stories on Facebook, on Instagram, where she's taking out time so that she can be in class for the Buddhist philosophy classes. And I was just like, you know, like, yeah, like, modern Tibetans right now, gotta do what you gotta do, but gotta be in touch with your roots, yeah? Yeah, that's Chemlamo, yeah.
Indeed, Lopsana. So, finally, I'd like to ask you whether you have any messages to our fellow Tibetans worldwide and also the plethora of Tibet supporters who continue to stand in solidarity with us Tibetans.
I think supporters, I have nothing to say because I think they probably know more than me why they support this cause and why they're there with us every single day. But then I think fellow Tibetans can just be like, keep hope, you know, continue what you've been doing, earn your livelihood, but be there, you know, like, and buy my comic book. Just kidding, but then, No, I think that's it, just like, keep on having the hope that you already have, you know. I don't want to say too much because I'm still finding my own way.
Yeah, understandable, that, definitely. So on that note, like, we from the Foundation for Nonviolent Alternatives would like to thank you and, you know, you're not the first artist that we had interviewed. We had also interviewed Tashi Nimala from Khatok Arts. They're doing amazing things. And I believe you've already met, right?
I have. The whole team.
Be in touch with them since you're already in Dharamsala. Yeah. I think you guys are doing amazing, not only yourself, but the entire Tibetan youths who are in this stream. And we can see even organizations now supporting it. I think recently there was a Tibetan artist festival just happened in Dharamsala. So this is a very important form of resistance in my own opinion, and I believe you also laid out your points for that matter. So thank you so much, Lofsan Sabala.
Thank you so much, Dhamdala.
For more updates and videos via FNVA, click on the link and please subscribe to our channel. Thank you for watching.